As George said, I know that it's hard to present a configuration management tool to people that know their systems well, know how to automate things. Most people have their own scripts. Most people have already chosen their tool. I've used Puppet, I've used CF Engine, I've used many other tools. I found Ansible recently. Ansible is about a year old. It started last February. And I got to Ansible when it was at version 0.4. I called it a Swiss Army knife orchestration. It's, you'll see why this description fits. I started actually in ops by accident. I've almost always been hired as a programmer. And then I see that the systems were either managed dissimilar, and I said, can't we script that, make it the same? So I ended up being ops. My first job was Windows NT 3.1. And we kept a physical logbook with a pen every time we ran a command, and we wrote it down. My big innovation at the time was, hey, can we just put it in a text file and print it to line printer that's just sitting there? Now we can copy and paste, and we still have a physical log in case the machine is down. This was my big innovation at the time. Then I started using the AT command in Windows, which I thought came from Windows. Later on I discovered, no, this is an old Unix command. And bad scripts. I evolved. I learned about Telnet, RSH. I started using shells. And hey, shells have for loops. Makes stuff much easier than, you know, typing every command. I can just go for these five things and make the five directories at a time in three lines instead of typing 10 lines. I evolved past that. I got to Perl, Python, custom scripts, then started doing parallel stuff, doing CSSH, PSSH, and then I got really the big boy apps for configuration management. CF Engine I started years ago, tested a couple of proprietary ones, have played with Puppet, have played with Chef, and many others, tested Fabric, Funk, Slaughter, Rex, and there's, at one point I made a list, 53 of them that I had touched at one point or another, and I was never happy with any of them. Here's what I didn't want at the point that I encountered Ansible. I just started creating my own again. I created almost always scripts and my own configuration managers at every company I've been. People in the audience have had to deal with my scripts. Hopefully in a good manner. Calm down. One thing I realized that for most of the places I worked with, they were very minimalist. They didn't want new ports open, new daemons to manage. So one thing I found a problem with a lot of configuration management is that they were agent-based. I saw that, okay, sometimes I can use agents, sometimes I cannot. I'd like something more flexible that lets me do both. Brings me to the ports. Most of them use their own ports. Another fight with the network guy, or another set of rules that you need to maintain to make this port accessible from the management machine. A lot of them would use SSL or private keys, GPG keys, authentication. Credentials you need to copy over and to manage, keep secure. All this was a lot of work to try to do less work. This personally bugs me. I try to do less work, not more work. Set up in general, as I put there. I am lazy. That's why I automate things. I don't want to do them twice. Once I do something twice, I get annoyed. The third time is I'm automating it. There's also a problem that sometimes you need to do something ad hoc. You need to do something quick, dirty, and it needs to work. And it cannot be in opposition with your configuration management, because suddenly you change this configuration and here comes your configuration management says, nope, it goes back. And now you get into, you're fighting to the, with the thing that should be making you work less. So about a year ago, I just started creating my own. There's only two people in this audience that have seen it. WriteConfig was my attempt to generalize templating. I was working in a Python shop, FreeBSD and Debian, and I decided, look, I've seen the Jinja templates work very well. Let me add that. I've always liked YAML as a description language that is both readable by humans and machines. I think it delivers on the promise that XML did a long time ago, but never really realized. YAML is very readable, at least in my point of view. And I started creating this. A month in, I find this other tool that already does this, plus the other 100 things that I wanted to do, and better. I looked at my code and I almost threw it away, except we were already using it. And I kid you not, two siblings and moving 20 files, I was able to use Ansible as a drop-in replacement to my own code, which made me very happy at the time. Ansible itself is a Python-based API, which has a few programs on top that use it. Michael Behan, the guy that creates Ansible, he's worked with Puppet. He's created Cobbler. He's created Funk or Fabric. I forget. I always confuse those. And the guy already had experience, so he said, screw it. I'm not creating a tool. I'm creating an API. And then I'll create tools on top. This already made it very flexible, and also he tried to keep it at a minimum. I'm going to use stuff that's installed almost everywhere. SSH, sudo, and since I'm using Python, PyPy. And this is minimal. I know other people say, oh, Python's very big, but for where I was, a Python shop, I had Python everywhere. Sudo and SSH, almost everybody has that everywhere. I found people that have like Gearman and had no SSH access, but that's the exception. Almost everybody has sudo and SSH already set up on their machines. That's how most people manage them. And that's one thing I love right away. Hey, I don't have to add an extra layer of authentication and authorization. I'm already using the layer I created. And I can manage it with this to expand or contract everything in that layer. It supports ad hoc. I'll show you some of my horrible awk. Is you can embed an Ansible, execute it on 20 servers, and get the results back. Beautiful. And what I do ad hoc does not necessarily conflict with what I force Ansible to do in an automated manner. It can be agent or agentless, which is one thing I do like. It gives me the option. I don't have to do it just one way, which is both a feature and sometimes a drawback, because sometimes you're like, oh, I got five ways to do it. Which one's best? Oh, let me try this. Oh, let me try that. But I prefer to have options to have a lack of options. And in that place, I really like Ansible. One thing that is also very flexible to run from the checkout. You source a file, and you can run from a checkout. You remove the environment variable, you're running from the system. By the way, I created inside the checkout, there's a FreeBSD port. I haven't tested it with OpenBSD or anything else. And I haven't submitted it because it's a really crappy port that just does a pip, easy setup, easy install, and actually I have to fix it. There's some current stable version is 1.1. 1.2 is being developed and there's a lot of changes in it, and I need to fix the port. But good things are happening every day. When Ansible executes, it strives to. It doesn't do this perfectly. It tries to be predictable, reproducible, idempotent. Every time you say, do this, the end effect should be that that has been done. Either it was done before, and then now it's a no-op, and it tells you, hey, nothing's changed. Or it makes the state of what you're declaring true. As I said, it aims to be idempotent. It can't be always, and sometimes it depends on you to make it idempotent. It follows a Unix philosophy. Ansible uses an API. This API has a bunch of little modules. This is why I call it a Swiss Army knife. Ansible itself does very little. It takes care of authentication and copying the module and executing the module, and whatever that module does, give me back either key value pairs or JSON, and I'll report back. Very simple. Now, you've got a bunch of modules that do everything from copy a file, create users, change groups, create authorized keys, set up a vagrant instance, shut down an EC2, manage ZFS, bunch of things. And Ansible just treats them all the same. They're these modules, they do their stuff. I execute them and report back. Very powerful. It also will pick up your custom modules. You can add them at several points. You can point it from configuration, or if you're executing what Ansible calls a playbook locally, it'll look, if you've got a directory named library right there, it'll look in there. And if that module exists, it'll pick it up and use it. Modules can be in any language. Very important. There's modules in Perl, there's modules in Shell, but Ansible itself only ships with Python modules. They only want Python for core. But for example, there's a zipper module in Shell for using the zipper package management. As I said before, Ansible itself has several executables. Ansible for ad hoc, Ansible playbook to execute playbooks, Ansible pull for an agent mode. And it also has a recently Ansible doc, which will give you documentation on anything. It uses API. With the API, you will call the playbooks, which is what you're actually writing. Playbooks are YAML files. We'll pick up from the module library, use transports. Ansible by default uses SSH, either through the Python Paramico library or the actual SSH binary itself. But it has a local transport for, hey, I'm not going anywhere, I'm just working locally. It has a change root transport. Hey, I've got this change root environment right here. Why go elsewhere? Here. This is how you do change root and execute the command there. And they're pluggable. It's actually pretty easy to create a transport. There's people right now, I think, working on a Gearman transport. And then there's plugins. Plugins are a bit different than modules in that they don't execute actions, but they either react or modify the actions. For example, there's a plugin that will log to a database. There's a plugin that will give you, for example, time on the output. And there's a bunch. There's one that will speak the commands through OS X's safe interface. So every time something executes, your machine will actually tell you out loud. You can email, you can do a bunch of stuff. Once you engage into the transport with your playbook and you just copy the modules to your app servers, databases, whatever else, you also can delegate actions. Hey, I want to shut down my web server, but the first action I'm going to do is take it out of rotation to my load balancer. How do I do that? I delegate this action to the load balancer, but the action is about my web server. So this action will go through a load balancer, take it out of rotation in the playbook that's referencing my web server. And there's a bunch of other stuff that you can do, but it's all very much staged and pluggable. It's very easy to understand once you get into the dynamics of it. This is a terminology. The inventory is where you list hosts, what hosts and what groups of hosts you want to put them in. And there's also, you can define variables associated with the host. This comes into play later. The modules, as I said, what does the work? These are the little knife, the little screwdriver you find in your Swiss Army knife. Whatever you need, there's probably a module for it, or if not, it's very easy to get one up and running and create it. The plugins we've already discussed. Stacks. Stacks is information Ansible associates to your server. Ansible will go in and ask the server, hey, who are you? Give me your host name. Give me how many drives you have, how many partitions, what are your IPs, a bunch of information. Those of you familiar with Factor or OHI, this works very similar. Actually, Ansible, if Factor and OHI are installed, will use them and add that to the facts. And you'll have this enormous hash of facts about your machine. You can use that later to do actions, for example, depending on what package manager do you have. Okay, then execute this with apt. Oh no, you got yum, execute with yum. It's OpenBSD, so I'm going to use the, I think it's TKG OpenBSD module. Playbook. This gets a bit confusing sometimes because people use the terms in playbook and play interchangeably. Playbook is just a collection of plays. It really doesn't exist unto itself until you execute Ansible playbook and it reads a bunch of plays. Play is where you relate a host or group of hosts to a group of tasks or actions. Modules come in play with the tasks. a task normally tells a module to do something. So I don't know if you can see this in the back. This is the inventory by default is a simple INI. You can also, if it's executable and you can return JSON, you can write your own inventory script. There's one for EC2, I believe CloudFront, Eucalyptus, all the clouds, people have written scripts for it. If it's a directory, it will go through all the files in the directory and say, oh, you're an INI, I'm going to include you, your script, I'm going to execute you, brings it all together, and that's your inventory. Inventory is hosts, what groups those hosts belong to, and variables you define for that host. Here I've defined two groups, web and DB. For example, you can also define hosts with ranges of numbers. So web bracket 02 colon 15 means I've got 14 servers defined there. Over there you see Ansible SSH port equals a port number. This is a variable I define, so hostweb1example.com will have this SSH port. This comes into play either in my pass or in this case for the connection plugins. In case you have a non-standard port for one machine, you can set it here. If you have a non-standard port for all machines, there's an Ansible config, or you can put it in the special group called all. That'll be a basically a default or generic config. I already talked about this. Inventories just need to return JSON. Ansible uses JSON almost everywhere to communicate. Modules can also use key value pairs, but most of them use JSON to take input and give back status. Modules. This list is already outdated, and I can tell you that there's almost doubled the number of modules. For almost anything you can think of, if the module's not there, people are writing it right now. The pace is almost staggering. You have database management going from React, MySQL, Postgres, no Oracle though. I don't know why. Modules to check out Gato's subversion to do release management. There's a MacPorts, a PIP module, there's OpenBSD and NetBSD packaging modules. This morning, somebody just submitted the FreeBSD package module, which is one of the things that was on my to-do list. They took it off it. Plugins, as I described before, these are callback or actions. They can do stuff with the data you return, or they can do secondary triggers. The connection that we talked, SSH, there's a local, there's a change route, and there's more in the works. We already talked about inventory, but there's also lookup and filter plugins that modify. For example, you can look up environment variables. You can read the contents of a file and use that in your task. You can read the list in the directory. You can pipe a command, and whatever the output of the command, you can iterate over it. Facts. When you run a playbook, facts are on by default. To disable them, you need to say gather facts false. If you know you're not going to use a fact in a playbook, it's just an extra action that you're running remotely that you might not want to. It's not very expensive, but it'll give you a 1 second delay at the start of a playbook while you're sitting there and it's, come on, move on. The default facts use OHI and factor, but if you want to shut off the default facts, you can get OHI and factor facts independently. There's modules that do that. Ansible is mostly developed as many tools by mostly the Linux crowd, but other OSs are not lagging that much behind. It's normally a day or a week when a feature gets introduced into Linux that it percolates to Solaris, AIX, and the BSDs. Initially, I did a lot of work of getting stuff working on FreeBSD, like gathering of the system information. I did a lot of that initially. There's other people that have done more. Getting service management also to work on FreeBSD was one of my initial contributions, and actually revisiting that now because services are a mess on Linux with everything, the systemd, upstart, and sysv5, and openrc, it's just very hard to get something that works in every case. And the facts are there for you to use. Once you go into a module, you can feed them those facts. And here's a sample of the facts. This is running from the ad hoc Ansible. Minus M setup, it calls the setup module. This is the one that actually does the fact gathering. And this is basically what it dumps out. A bunch of variables named Ansible underscore whatever. And each one will have a value or have a list underneath. It's all JSON, easy to read, and all this is usable later on. This is a playbook. A playbook is a YAML file. And it starts by defining which host you're going to go against. For example, I have a web group, so I'm going to use the web group as my target. I'm going to use sudo. I can say that here, I can say that in command line, I can put that in configuration. I can do it even at a task level. I can define variables for use in this playbook and rest of the playbooks, or I can pull in from the facts or from the inventory. There's several levels and there's a precedence. If you're going to use Ansible, please read the precedence first, because I think it's one of the major places where people get confused. You need to know which variable overwrites which when. It's not perfectly clear unless you read the precedence. And then I have two tasks here. Handlers are tasks also, but I'm moving that out. One installs Nginx. This was written before today, which there's a package management being added for previously. So I just shelled out and used package add. And where you see there creates, that's a condition to make it idempotent. Because I was having a hard time using package info to match it to what package add expected. But Ansible gives me the creates. It means that if this file exists, you've already run successfully. So if Nginx is installed, I don't need to install it. The next one is using the template module. You'll see there's a big small difference. The first one uses action colon and then puts the module name. The second task, you can use the module name as the variable. Yes?
Is it possible to have a process that will run to determine whether the thing is already been done or not?
Yes. You can run a task that queries and then register a variable and then query that variable to see if the results of what happened.
So then you can make the action dependent on whether that variable is set.
Yes. You've got several conditionals. Before 1.2, you use mainly only if or when something, when failed, when string, when boolean. Now it's been simplified. The syntax has changed a lot. Most of what I'm showing you is 1.1 and previous syntax. 1.2, you're allowed to use Jinja templating inside the playbook, which right now I'm not using. But that's not out yet, and it's been developing very fast. You'll see in the second action, I have a notify, Nginx restart. This will take me to the handler. Handlers get executed at the end of a playbook. So if I run everything and nothing changes, I don't restart Nginx. Notify executes on change, by the way. But if my template configuration changes, it uses MD5 to just check if the files are the same or not. Then it will restart Nginx for me. If you see, it says restarted. Ansible tries to establish a state, not an action. Yes?
Versioning. How would I go about, say, the old version of Nginx was wrong and I want to deploy the
Not with this action here, but with most package managers, you can specify latest or a specific version.
Okay, that's cool.
And in this case, in package add, you can pass it as you would to package add. And as you see at the end, I just execute this playbook with minus K. Minus K says prompt me for the sudo password. Ansible will prompt you for passwords at the start once. And then it'll use that password across all machines. So you want to run a command against 50 machines, you only have to introduce your password once, as long as it's the same password. If you start changing password per machine, as I used to do, which I have to stop doing to use this, it gets really annoying. Yes? Ansible lets you organize it your way. You have includes. You can set up a playbook that calls other playbooks. You cannot change scope, so you cannot call a playbook within the tasks list, but you can call 10 playbooks at a time, or define one playbook, end that playbook, and start other plays. I'm sorry, gets confusing, playbooks and plays. I do this all the time. If you get into the IRC channel, you'll see that everybody does it, even the creator. Then we stop and say, no, 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 playbooks are lists of plays. To the right, you see a small play. This installs my admin users. I use the two variables, one the list of users, Bicoca, Eut, dog, and I pass them to a admin group. Admin group is a variable that I'm pulling in from, in this case, I believe, matching the OS. Because in Debian, the admin group is wheel, and or no, I'm sorry, sudo. In FreeBSD is wheel. In other distributions, it's different. Whatever group is assigned to have sudo all, it'll magically populate it there. It looks a bit like Perl. This is the old syntax. The new syntax would be two brackets on each side. I'm sorry, two curly braces. And then it includes a task, user actions, and it passes the list of items. So it'll execute the user action for each one of the three items I'm giving it. That user action basically just creates users and assigns them to a group, adds a password, and adds the authorized keys. In 12 lines plus another 10 to 12 lines in the other by defining data and this action that I can use over and over, I populate the admin group everywhere. I do this for also normal users or give different levels of sudo. This is looking into the user actions, which I'm including in the other one. You can use YAML syntax. YAML has some interesting stuff that sometimes scares even the author of Ansible, that you can do stuff like create a default and then include it in other places. In this case, I've broken down for readability. If you put the greater than sign, you can break out what is a single line into a multi-line. And this basically goes through the user's file for each item that I was passing it above, and then substitutes the values in there. And you can see it could get pretty complex. You can put in a hierarchical, either lists or hashes or dictionaries, better said.
In common practice, how much hierarchical data, or how many needs for arrays do you actually really encounter?
Actually, mostly for stuff like users or custom applications. If you remember in Talbot, the Talbot environment that can take, it's a huge Python hash of dictionary, which includes another 500 dictionaries. It's very easy to construct that. I basically reduce that to a template of 80 lines, and everything else is just the data definitions that populate it. So normally, in normal system administration, not really. Users might be the most complex case because you have several items on the user, but it can get really complicated. And YAML gives you the flexibility to go all the way down the rabbit hole. It's a lot of rope with which to hang yourself.
Is it soft though?
No. You choke on either.
So this first creates the user using the user module, then it ensures that the .ssh directory exists in case the skeleton or whatever method in your distribution did not create the .ssh. It ensures proper permissions. And then it uses the authorized key module to add keys to that user. And then I do a local action, which could be a callback, which I just call shell and log what I did. Actually, when you execute Ansible on the server side, on the target, it normally logs its actions also. It tells you what it did. And if you're using sudo, you're going to get it twice because your authorized, your security log should show that. This is the file definition that we're using. I have users. I list each user. Each user has a set of properties, their ID, their name, and their password. And this is one nice thing. One problem I had with Puppet it was I couldn't do user management on FreeBSD. I think they fixed that since then. That was 3-4 years ago. Ansible right off the bat tries to do the right thing across all OSs. You give it a password hash, it'll populate it everywhere. Then you can let people change their passwords. If you're putting keys, they just need it to sudo. This is a one-liner. This is actually one I've used in production several times. Check out what the number of an HTTP code is in my current production log of Nginx. Run it against N web servers. And this is something I used to go to each web server and do, or use CSSH or PSSH to do. Ansible can do it easily. You can put this into play. You can, I mean, it's not a good example of power. It's just very convenient for me, and I get to keep my one-liners. I have a directory full of them. Some of them I haven't used in years, but I really like to be able to reuse them when the time arises.
So it parallelizes them. Command is automatically parallelized?
Yes, by default 5, but if you pass options you can go as high as your machine can handle. It uses Python's multiprocess module, so these are 4s. Take that in mind, it doesn't use much memory, but if you start noticing that it's slowing down when you're doing 3 to 500 forks, there's a fireball transport which actually uses 0 and Q, so when you're doing 3 to 500 machines at the same time, it actually creates a ephemeral 0 and Q message bus network, passes all the command, comes right back, and it's incredibly fast, but unless you're really at the high end of the number of machines you need to do exactly right now, it's not something you go into. A lot of the features that it's just, there's no time to go over all of them. I have talked about Delegate 2. Tags are a good way of filtering which actions you want to do or not. Roles is something new in 1.2, which is basically a better way of doing includes of sets of plays or playbooks. Local, pull, fireball, and load I just talked about. Fork and serial. Serial is different than fork. Fork will go to N machines and run each task. Ansible will then go to another N machines and run the same task, and then another. When all machines are done, it goes to the second task. Serial, on the other hand, says, no, run the whole play against this number of machines before you go to the next. So if you give serial 3, it will do 3 machines, the whole play, then the next 3, then the next 3. This is especially good for rolling updates or for rolling releases. You can play with both. I advise you to go online, look at the examples. Conditionals we've already talked about, only if, when, notify. CalSay. If you have CalSay installed, Ansible will use it to display status. You can turn it off. There's also a random option. Do not use the standard cal, but you know, that's just for people like me that like to spruce up their output. There's a check mode, very important. Check is not a perfect representation of what will happen. It's what Ansible thinks it will happen, because a lot of things, as we discussed, there's conditionals that you won't know until you run a command. If you're skipping a command and just saying, this is what I would have run, and you don't have the output because you haven't run it, there's no way to know what really would happen. You can do diff. Diff works with copy and template. Very good to see the difference between the file you're putting into place and the file that was there. Limit filters host, list tasks, list host shows you what a playbook is going against or wants to run. There's a step, there's start at, there's a bunch of other options. There's the next line is lookup plugins, pipe file, lines. There's a bunch of them, third-party modules. There's tons of stuff. I can't keep up anymore. I used to know everything about it between versions 04 and 09. Now I go every day, holy When did this happen? Oh, 3 months ago. You didn't know? How do you know? It's almost very fast, very important. They are very particular of keeping backward compatibility. A playbook you write today should run in Ansible tomorrow. If not, it is a bug. Report it. Bugs normally get fixed within the day. If it's very complicated, sometimes it takes a bit longer. This is what I used to bootstrap FreeBSD. This is one of the beauties of Ansible. It has a raw module. Raw module has no dependencies on the target. It just SSHs and passes a command. So you can use Ansible to install the requirements for Ansible to run. You can't run any other module than raw, but raw, for example here, installs Python. Python above 2.4 comes with JSON. 2.4 and 2.5, depending on distribution, you need to add simple JSON. Ansible requires on the target machines Python 2.4 and above and JSON. Some modules require more stuff. The SE Linux module requires Python bindings for SE Linux. App module, same thing. Each module should have it documented. Once I install Ansible, I'm sorry, the dependencies, now I can run a template, for example, and update the sudoers file. One option that just got added in 1.2 is validate. Before I copy the file into place, I can run a validation command. If that validation command fails, I will abort. This happened very funny that one of the early contributors to Ansible ran very similar command to what I have there, updated sudoers, and locked himself out of the box. This is a to-do list I started 3 months ago. And I expected to come here and try to get more people involved to collaborate. And in the last 3 months, people have just been taking things left and right out of my to-do list. This morning, somebody just submitted the FreeBSD package manager, which I hadn't even taken out of the list yet. Service management, bringing services up and down, enabling, disabling, taken care of. The service module does it. Network facts, already taken care of. Jails, managing jails, you can manage them through the service module if you're using SCRC djails. You can pass options, which is basically the jail name that you want up or down. Or I'm missing fact collection about jails. Other virtualization environments have fact collection that you can check Vagrant, VirtualBox, and even what's the one you pay for?
VMware.
Thank you. You can check what's running, what are the stats of the host, all that. That's something I want to add to jails. I have not had time. If anybody has time, please contribute. I think it will make your lives and everybody else's much easier. General facts improvement. People keep adding information about the systems every day. FreeBSD, actually this should work for most BSDs, the collection. There's people, I know a bit of FreeBSD, there's people that know much better. I really don't know well OpenBSD or NetBSD, but other people have been contributing there. There are enough facts to do most stuff, but if people that know these systems well can take a look at it, improve upon them, correct them, find better ways. I do a very hackish thing with etcfsab to get the partitions. It's not nice. And there's a FreeBSD port, which is included in the Ansible checkout. It was working as of 1.1. I need to still test it with 1.2. There's been some rearrangement. The modules used to be in one directory, library. Now they're in subdirectories. This, I think, breaks the port. I should be able to fix that. But improvements, please, are welcome. Credits, I'll post the link to this presentation online if you want to follow up and see more about Ansible. I stole, borrowed, and copied a lot from the people that I mentioned here to create these slides. And that's it. I have some examples later if you want to see. Any questions? Comments?
What's your experience with other configuration management software?
I've dealt with a few of them. I was saying this before in the presentation. I've done extensively CF Engine, a bit less Puppet, done a lot of custom stuff, tried Chef, tried a bunch of tools, Funk, Fabric, what am I forgetting? There's many out there. This one just met my needs better than most. It was very similar to what I wanted to do myself.
Okay, so between yourself and others that have used other configuration management software, what's the most common benefit that you hear for switching to Ansible?
Well, two of them. Simplicity to get started. You can do a git clone as source of environment file. You can get started with Ansible right there. No daemons, no extra management. And one thing a lot from the Puppet guys is, hey, predictable execution. I don't have to run it 15 times to get all the dependencies to actually work in the end. That's a common gripe, which I think the Puppet people have addressed, but I haven't been following it for about the last year and a half.
So you're saying other like CF Engine and Puppet or whatnot need to run an agent on the endpoint?
Most of them do. There's people that have hacked Puppet to run in a push mode. Ansible, off of that, you don't need to hack it. You can run pull or push as you wish. Right.
So the, what is it, closed closure bias against all things easy. So, one thing I don't see is the separation of different concerns that I always see as being a problem in Puppet environments, in Chef setups, and also in pretty much everything that exists outside of all this new stuff. A separation of different types of application and security and systems concerns. What I mean by that is like user management being an isolated thing. Configuration management being separated from application and software deployed, right? So how does Ansible deal with that? I have one more question.
It completely pumps on it. It's up to you to set up users and sudo as you see fit. Ansible just uses the underlying framework you've already set up. For example, in my current job, there's people that can manage Tomcat, there's people that can manage Nginx. They can't touch the configuration files, but they can restart them. I'm managing all this through sudo, through keys, and
through Unix.
Basically, yes, through Unix.
Okay. The second question goes into then where you also, and I'm assuming the answer is going to be similar. Another weakness is in all of these systems, as well as everything everybody writes themselves from scratch, is basically a kind of a denial of the fact that you're making structured lists of things. Servers, users, applications, things that are running, things that are not running, all that kind of stuff. How does Ansible deal with that there as well? Is a decision to punt in? Because the experience I see is that, you know, following the Chef path, following the Puppet path, takes you down into a big spaghetti pile of your world very quickly, right? So this is something that I, looking at having limited systems for, a period of time, don't really want to see. How's that for your facilities?
Do you mean the necessity of having pre-created lists?
I'm talking about beyond even just pre-provisioning things that change and run out, like I think that's a good one. Lists of things that don't change and run out, like the software that we install on every web server, right? Like basically organizing all of that data and just being organized about these things ends up being the crux of the problem that a lot of the software is trying to solve. And I don't see any of it doing a good job. How does Ansible do it? Like I don't see any of it really providing a path or facilities that are clear or straightforward.
So let me reduce that very simplistically. You're asking on how does Ansible deal with the mess that is reality of all these lists and groups and properties and everything that's scattered all over the place that nobody knows? Two ways. One, it forces you to get into Ansible in a digestible manner, into a dictionary. And it offers you a couple of tools. One of them is the input is scriptable. You can have this in Active Directory, LDAP, NIS database, whatever. And you can create a script that feeds it into Ansible in a JSON format. Or you can use Ansible's own YAML format to document this, which makes it very readable. This example here uses security group from EC2DB servers. This gets pulled because it uses the EC2 plugin. And the people that wrote this will keep all that information in Amazon tags. So it pulls everything from all the tags, and that information is there. And this guy dynamically says, hey, look, I've got an EC2 plugin, I'm going to Amazon. Amazon gives me, this script gives me a huge JSON. This JSON has the groups, has the variables, has the IPs, has everything I need to know. Continue forward. Ansible itself will not organize this for you. It does give you a couple of tools, YAML and JSON, that make it very easy to organize. But it's up to you to organize it.
In terms of follow-up, is there any thoughts or anything as far as audit? Or, okay, I have a network. Ansible has its view of the network. How do I reconcile Ansible with reality? But in an automate, I'm not even asking you to change anything. It's my exception report. As far as what if this is a web server or if there's an idea that people need to know what stands and stands.
Well, Ansible, the question is how do I get Ansible to, in an automated manner, reconcile itself with what I think reality is?
Audit itself might be a better word. I don't want to actually have changes. I don't want the machine to become a Frankenstein. I just wanted to tell you how this was the problem, because I can schedule work.
So how do I verify that Ansible has the correct view of my network?
Well, the same view. I don't know if it's right, just consistent.
So you can dump the information from Ansible. It has a list hosts, list tasks, you can dump the variables, and you can compare that to your data source or to what you think it should be.
But are you asking about Ansible auditing itself?
Well,
or
no, it's a matter
Ansible
of, I've got the configuration system, I've got a pile of shit, that's my network. And I have to put the two together because I need to know on what Ansible thinks exists or doesn't, because that's a cleanup task. I need to find where the Venn diagram is, where the overlap is, and what the two extremes are. Okay. There's stuff in the network that Ansible is not managing. That's a problem. There's stuff that Ansible is managing that's both not in the network. That's a problem. There's a few batches of work that I need to basically make a list of tickets for.
Well, when you run Ansible, one thing it'll tell you is what has changed, what has not. When it has to create an action, or when everything was okay and it just verified it. It doesn't have a one input that, or one output that gives you exactly what you want, but you can create a callback plugin that does that. There's actually a project done by the author, Ansible Commander. It's going to be a web GUI that's going to use the callback plugins, it's going to use the output, and create a nice little reporting infrastructure on top of that. That is not part of the Ansible core, it's going to use Ansible as an API. That is basically right now in alpha. There's a copy of it in GitHub if you want to go look at it. There's people that have created logging modules that log to Postgres and then create reporting from that.
Okay.
Ansible itself doesn't do it, but the tools are growing.
That's fine. I'm really just interested in if it exists at all.
Have you ever used or come across something called Blueprint?
Yes.
So one of the most interesting things about Blueprint is you can, it will look at a system and find all the things that vary from the original package that was never installed. And does anything exist like that to sort of build an Ansible configuration from a system that is already modified from the case and so on?
So the question is there something similar to Blueprint that can reverse engineer changes to a system from its base for Ansible? The answer is that there's actually somebody working in Blueprint to Ansible integration, using Blueprint to show the differences to generate automatically plays for Ansible to be able to create systems similar to the one you got, which there are several tools that work with Blueprint. Ansible is just going to be another one of them. Anybody else?
Is there a mode where you can have it? Does it cache any of the facts that it collects from the systems? Can you put it in a mode where it'll collect all the information in a way that you can know
like a query or database or?
So the question is, does Ansible cache the facts, the information that it gathers? Base Ansible does not, but there's a couple of callback plugins, and Ansible Commander does exactly that. They put it into a database, and there's a SQL-like version, there's one that just puts it into a log, there's one that creates a YAML file, and then you can reuse that fax. In 1.2, there's talk about adding a cache, so you don't have to do a gather or query every time.
Does that maintain temporal integrity, or is it just a snapshot?
I'm sorry,
does it maintain the fact that things have changed over time, and okay, this is the last thing, this is this week, or does it just maintain one snapshot, this is what I got now?
I have no idea. The question is, does it maintain versions or dates about this caching? I don't know. The two plugins I know don't, and I don't know what's going to happen in Commander.
Alright, so the question is, do you think the architecture is such that it could be easily extensible into a configuration database, whether it's just reversioning history or an actual configuration database?
Yes, it's the question is it extensible to do this either way? That's exactly what they're doing. And they had a couple of issues with the API that involved more flexibility, and instead of building it into Commander, they built the flexibility into Ansible. As I said, it follows very much the Unix philosophy. It does a bunch of little things very well, and it changes them. And it exposes this API to anybody that wants to use it.
Is there a lovely GUI associated with all this?
That's Ansible Commander that is being created as we speak.
Web 2.0 kind of GUI, or is it Windows 3.1
To tell you the truth, I have no idea because I have really very little interest in GUIs.
Good answer.
You have to validate a play from another perspective, like another machine outside the network or whatever. How would you go about doing
something? What do you mean by validate?
Taking a web server out of the load balancer and you want to make sure that happens. How would you validate that from outside the play?
Well, the question is, how do I validate that the action happened from outside the play?
Outside the machine that you're executing the play.
Oh, you can actually outside of the machine that you're running the play against. So I'm running a play against machine A, taking out a load balancer B, but I'm running the play for machine C, which is my laptop. How do I validate that machine B has taken A out of rotation? You can actually add a task that says query machine B, give me the list of whatever's in rotation, if your load balancer has that. I actually just wrote a script that does that for Nginx.
And then if it fails, B would not continue to play on A.
Yeah, and there's a couple of play management modules. There's prompt, there's fail, there's debug, there's, I forget another one. You can also ignore errors in the play. Normally Ansible, when it finds an error, it stops that play for the host that error happened. Other hosts can continue okay, but it'll flag that host. Stop it there, and then tell you, hey, this is what happened. I did 5 things okay here, 3 things changed, and load failed. You can tell it, ignore errors, and then you have a when failed conditional that you can recover or do stuff like put it back into rotation because I failed to copy my code there.
Does it have the ability to resume something?
That just got added in 1.2. Does Ansible have the ability to resume? In 1.2 now, if a play gets interrupted, you will get a temporary file that will let you, and it will push out the command that you need to restart the play at the exact point. You also have start at task, which you can go to a play and just say, hey, I know that all these 10 items are okay, let's start at the 11th. You also have set. You can go action by action and okay each one, which some people will recognize. I do that a lot in the shell scripts the first time I deploy them.
What about heavy lifting? Like, what's the heaviest lifting you've trusted this with? I mean, pulling, you know, web servers off of load balancer is one thing, but is there any heavy lifting you've done when you've kind of been like sitting in your seat as you're doing it with Ansible?
I've updated the super response. I think there's no more heavy lifting than that, but code release is a good example,
so
right? Update database.
Code release, yeah. Okay.
I'm doing that right now. I left a mostly code release my previous job. I don't know how you guys are doing with that. No, nothing. He's like, I need the really evil stare, so something must be wrong.
No, we actually use it for our configuration display. So it actually works very well. We use a mix of shell that wraps Ansible, and they pretty much have different groups. So say, production would be one group, which is a group of web servers, and we pretty much set the key explain tagging that you can tag items.
Yeah, and if you call a play and say give it tags config, it will only execute the items that have config in the tag. By default, it executes all tags. And if you tag different things, you can be selective also that way as a filter.
We use tags, we use config files. Config file names as tags, and we toss Ansible, deploy this config file on this group of servers, and it'll execute it. We make it a little more complicated since we use Jinja templates, but Ansible compiles Jinja for you, so we generate the template, and we distribute it to n amount of hosts. Very easily. So we just get it one file name, a group of hosts, and deploy a script and shell, so it's a command line with two arguments. So we can do that for any config file, we can do that for application Nginx hosts, cool stuff. You even have a playbook that runs through every single config file and say, hey, if this is at a date, I don't know what I need, generate every single one of those for every single one.
Just as a kind of follow-up back to something you said earlier, so you're basically running this either at a quad or command line, for instance.
Yes.
That's it.
Well,
there's no daemon running, it's just going.
No daemon. I've experimented with setting it up with daemon tools and trigger listen, but that's just me being insane.
Cancel meeting, meeting's over.
Yeah. As I said, that's just me being insane.
Just teasing me.
Is there anything glaring in terms of coverage, if someone was using Puppet to go to this, that they would be missing?
So the question is there anything glaring in coverage that people that were using Puppet have gone to Ansible and said, oh, why doesn't it do this? Actually, the only thing that I've heard people complain about is the lack of an rsync module. And I don't think Puppet has that either. File distribution, Ansible can use copy and fetch and even does git checkouts. It doesn't have a file repository like Puppet, but it also does not have a server, so you don't need to maintain it. But if you have a Samba server and HTTP server, you can use paths to do that, but it doesn't have a built-in. That's one question a lot of people coming from Puppet, where do I put my files? Wherever you want. However you want.
Can't you use Ansible to install rsync and then use Ansible to run rsync?
That's the most common answer. Can't you use Ansible to install rsync and run rsync? The most common answer is you go to IRC, and I've posted this so often that it's now a macro in my keyboard. Use local action rsync. That already got a rsync.
Does Ansible have its own header? I'm just
kidding.
Possibly. I don't know yet.
It's not dependent. I think I remember Funk being having a problem with it. You needed to in groups and use it probably.
Yes.
You can SSH to that user.
Yes.
So you can give your developer, you can teach them how to create the YAML and then they can release their own stuff.
So one question is, does Ansible need to run as root? Can it run as any user? There's two variables you need to know about. Remote user, which is the user you log in as, and sudo user, which is the user you sudo into. So you can give your developer Mike access with his own user, so remote user becomes, you can even pull from environment, current user is your remote user by default, but you can say, well, Mike on his machine is Michelangelo, but he needs to be Mike, so here's a short name. And the sudo, hey, I don't want to give you root, but I've created this user called Tomcat Admin. So you sudo to Tomcat Admin to run commands. It, again, punts a lot to tools that are very well known, SSH sudo, the problems, behaviors, the configuration, I think everybody here knows very well. And Ansible said, why am I going to do it? These tools already exist, they do it well. Yeah.
If I could just... I really want to come back to some good points about, I really want to hear about why not just use those tools. why not just use sudo? Why not use SSH? Why not use SSH and pipes? And pipe remote entire programs and entire, you know, like SSH, pipes, firewalls. SSH does multiplex. It's wonderful.
Yes. I love SSH.
Like, you know what I mean? I mean, it's not like, no, I wasn't dissing it. You know,
No. I understand. The question is, why not use the basic tools that Ansible uses? SSH, sudo, add up the shell, Perl. This is what I've been doing for a long time. The problem comes when you need to delegate that administration to people that are not as comfortable with awk and look at that and say, what alien language is this? Ansible makes very simple, readable YAML files that I've given to Ruby and Java developers and they understand right off the bat. I gave them my awk scripts and they look at me like I just killed a baby.
Okay, I understand that there's a comfortability with particular things like newfangled YAML versus text, streams of text.
Yeah. But it's what it is. YAML is a stream of text.
Sure. But at the end of the day, though, once you're actually doing anything meaningful with it, the problem that I find in handing this off to more quote junior or not novice or less experienced people, is that what you're doing is you're handing them an abstracted meta wrapper on top of things that they are eventually going to have to uncover, usually under duress. So why not just get going with the actual meat of it anyways?
That's true with any framework or tool that is not directly. Why are you not accessing the file system directly? There's zeros and ones, because that's what you're doing in the end.
There isn't one Unix noob or one old school admin who has used a package management system who doesn't know just a bit about GCC and make. I mean, that's kind of what I'm getting at is like the wrappers.
I think you underestimate.
Okay. People who are running machines for longer than a year.
No, again, you're being very, very kind.
Lucky, but sheltered.
I just met an admin of 15 years that does not know what the package manager does.
What could it do besides?
You need to hop into these places and then it registers into this database so it knows where the packages. Yes, what can you do? Yeah, that conversation has had me spent for 3 days.
Well, a lot of these systems really are trying to reduce things to declarative statements about what is supposed to happen, because when you do that, you're effectively reducing something to data, which you can then compare, and you can version, and it doesn't have a lot of the variability that writing code, you could, I mean, you go about it, you could write 5 different scripts that do all the same thing, but you can't compare them because the methodology is entirely different. But if you have a standard declarative way of laying out this is how certain things get done, or at least how they're structured, then that standardization, especially when you're going across system types, gives you like convenience but abstraction at the same time.
Much better than my own answer. Declarative data is very easy to compare and audit. Code varies across the board.
The other thing I would say is more maintainable. Like if you want to get to the point of where you can construct machines off the fly, you're going to end up with some ridiculous 80,000 on the shelf that you can't maintain because they have all the possibilities. Just, at some point, they no longer scale. The software can generate rules and actions more efficiently than you can. Computers are made to automate things.
Appreciate it, but there's a certain part of me that feels like that argument applies equally to shell itself, and maybe thousand lines of shell script, which to me is, yes, an obvious operation, but why is that any different than something written in Python, something that uses that wraps tools instead of using?
Well, the point is that you get to a higher level of abstraction. Well, if I have to think about all of these thousand lines of shell script, that's when my brain explodes, and I can't actually get it cohesive and make it work right. If I get to sit at a higher level, I can think about things at different levels of bigger black boxes, and then I can actually.
I think there's not much difference there. You're talking about, well, the steps I go through are about the same either way, so why have this extra pile of crap over here?
Yeah.
He's saying that the steps that I go through are not quite the same. So if you don't want to execute those steps, the steps I have to go through to generate them are much simpler and easier to comprehend. And I get a predictable result either way.
If you reduce the piles graph to smaller
It's
modular.
And then you can reason about how they interact at a higher level.
I'm just unclear about how that's impossible with shell.
It's much harder to do in a procedural than a declarative manner. Because with what you're talking about, you are saying I am going to do these steps. What he's talking about with the Ansible basically at the level you're configuring things, where John Picard is saying make it so. And you have to, so you're arguing about basically two layers of abstraction. Make it so is a lot easier to figure out than actually how to do it. You've been in these meetings with business people. Make it so, you know? Dude, come on.
You have control over the procedures through modifying the module.
Yeah, I
appreciate that, but I mean, I guess this is where I'm getting at is that I don't think that the one thing I will say that I can say I'm being defensive about here is that I see the use of these tools not as some kind of procedural flaw. I think that a flag thrown to SSH is to me very similar to an idea of a meta wrapper or configuration file that says do this thing concurrently or do this thing.
I still think you're looking at basically shell versus prolog text logic. And here you're saying you have this database of how the world should look, and then I have this garden gnome that goes out and does it. And generally speaking, I don't tinker with the garden gnome. It just works. He does his shit, I'm happy. Your way, you're the garden gnome. And now...
There's also a simpler... another thing that I think is more important than that. If user management is conceptually the same on all Unix systems, but every system has a slightly different way, a format or what goes in the file, which files are used, what mechanisms they use. And if you've got code which basically is like, this is this way, this is this way, if you have a data set which is these are the users, and whichever system you happen to be on, that thing gets applied in the right way, then instead of you having to write a shell script which deals with all of the exceptions for different systems, you're not thinking about that. That is something that so one person has to think about per system at a time. And you don't have to think about
per flavor of Linux, kind of. It's like, Now, I'm not even sorry, other OSs, just for one OS, you have Baskin Robbins to deal with all 31 flavors. And they're all subtly different, and they all kind of work differently, and it's a pain in the ass.
Any question?
And computers and software in general, you have a big trade off between how abstract you think about things, and how to violate abstraction, and how it works. Which is part of your problem. Because there's never any perfect abstraction where you don't learn how it works. This is my problem with C++. You have to know all the stupid things that talent behind your back. Because everyone's got performance code in C++, and that's the problem. But all it's the same way. If you write to a protocol program and you don't understand how the thing is actually parsing and the steps to them, you'll screw yourself, and it'll take a long time to run.
Not such a little prolog program, but you've got to switch to do lines.
Yeah, something like that. You have to understand implementation details, and that's the problem. You want an abstraction when you don't have to do that, and you almost never do in that case. But it's still generally a lot easier to think about things at a higher level in more abstract terms than to think about all the more detail. I don't program in assembly all day. It's cool, it's fun, but I could do that. I can program in assembly. It's not more.
So to your point, this does not preclude a system administrator from running the system and how it works. But it gives you a very good point of showing the developer that just came up as is, no, this is what's happening. I'm creating these files, this and this, and this you can read. My shell script, you cannot read. You hide the gnome, basically, taking the same
algorithm. From the operation point of view, as a senior person in the shop, there's nothing to preclude you from engaging in sadism or training of them, depending on how you want to look at it. Trust me, I've been on both sides, and it's depending upon which side you're on.
I isn't saying like, oh, instead of using, you know, SCP, why don't we just have diff plus R plus
no, S. I'm not FTP.
I know, but
that's would argue against the use of LS.
Right.
Why would you need that when you have, you know,
SOSR?
Why would you have MD?
I'm sorry. MD over MD.
Well, I mean, DD is a copy, MD is an atomic.
DD and CP, you could argue.
DD and CP, I'm sorry. Look. The point that I'm trying to make here isn't that all spheres is what I'm getting at. What I'm actually saying is that the actual function of what a lot of people like this actually provide is all there in the operating system.
Yes.
I mean, I understand that a lot of people find Shell painful. I understand that a lot of people find all of these things painful, but then we should really figure out a way to replace the login prompt with Python interpreter.
Now that you mentioned this, somebody had a problem that they only had the fish shell on the machine and could use nothing else. So you have to adapt Ansible to so you can select what shell you run. It runs on safe by default,
honestly,
but you can run fish.
But there's another issue that this raises as far as just the mechanics of finding competent people. Now, if you're going to say,
I've been to too many small shops with a lot of this new stuff in the last 10 years of my career.
I've been in bigger shops.
To actually see people who know nothing but these tools, right? Yeah. Like, Brian, I've worked with, and I know you, and I know your skills, and I know the depth of your experience. I also know that I've walked into a ton of shops where nobody really knows anything about how to manipulate the
shell.
Nobody actually knows how to function.
I'm not arguing that, but here's the thing. I'm looking at it differently because most of my experience has been in shops with people more than 10 Americans with a broad range of skills. Now, this is something that a senior admin can give to a junior admin to maintain without having a deep understanding of the system and the various flavors of the system that you have to deal with. So I've now taken something that would have taken you as someone who's like 2 steps above a college education, get most of this done and not bother you if you're much more expensive than it is. And if work still gets done, maybe not as fast, but that's why it's paid a lot less.
But will a junior admin become a senior admin by only...
Well, he will. Well, that's a training issue, and there's some people who have 15 years experience. There's some people who have 1 year experience, 15 times.
And to Mike's point, when it breaks, everybody learns.
Right.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is as a senior person at Jordan and McShop, well, basically, it's training, it's DR, it's fucking with people. And basically, it's really, we're doing this, that doesn't work, figure it out. You actually, in bigger shops, especially if you have, say, audit compliance or sort of regulatory compliance, training and documented training and ER run-throughs are important because then the auditors don't shit on you and then it gets really expensive. Look, auditors are very expensive and they get very unhappy. They stop everybody's fucking work and everybody has to keep the auditors happy. Again, this is a different set of experiences we've had before there. So for stuff like this, that configuration file alone versus your very long shell script.
Will VS lots of little shell scripts.
Well structured, well thought out data sources.
This is something I can point an auditor at and say we have this and magic, and an auditor will be like, oh, I can understand this and I trust your magic because this makes me happy. It's declared, it's stated, it's under version control of the text files. And I can show him that you don't really care if it works, you care that you're going through the proper procedure. It's your problem to see that it works. Your solution, you're going to have to actually explain to him. If you have to explain something to an auditor, you have problems.
My question is typing a text file to column. That's my solution.
But to his point, I've been two more audits than I can.
That's bullshit. Mark, you pushed the point overboard. I totally agree with you.
I agree with you.
You're mad at us.
Because Steve used to come in here
and want to put any and no business of being reasonable, okay?
I know. I tell him he's reasonable the first time in his life and knows me.
Well, I'm doing it wrong, guys.
But really, like, I mean, I think that's the it's a perception problem that I'm talking about here. When you're
education,
that you're going to make 100 line shell scripts.
No. That you're going to have lots of shell scripts. Shell scripts are a declarative language is inherently less brittle than a procedural language. It just is. You have two different languages you use. This is a maintenance load. It requires more changing. It requires more expensive people to do it. You're in small shops, everybody has to be competent. I'm in large shops where we have a lot of times there are chunks of the business that I'm not quite sure how it works because I don't have the time to get into that and that's someone else's problem. There's a team that handles that. I don't touch it. And there's the things that if I did touch, unless the dance, even if it was on fire, I would get fired for. There are people who handle that you don't, which is not how small shops run.
Also, once you leave the small shop, the next guy that comes in needs to read your shell script.
And
at least three people here have seen my shell scripts. Yes.
Not terrible.
They work. But God forbid somebody else needs to modify them. God forbid I need to modify them a few months from now. Tell me how much easier it is to deal with my playbooks than with my shell scripts.
So are we making a culture where admins are actually no longer interacting with computers as people who are engineers? Are we making it a culture
where
engineering is still here. It's just
at a higher level. You're abstracting out detail, but by the same token, we don't program with dip switches anymore either. We did.
That's
a human problem. You can't blame that one on technology. Until they get genetic engineering working, you can't blame that one on technology. But we have progressively corrupted your computing, gone from solder to dip switches and rotary phone dialers to input the head, plug board to various.
The cloud.
Better shit. As we can get the system to actually handle the overhead. C was a big deal in its day, because my God, how are you not going to get this done in assembly level?
You're right. And now we're on Mars drawing really interesting pictures.
Yeah. Once.
Yeah. The phrase, like they talk about what a small shop is and what a small shop isn't. There's a very, very, very well-known firm, I'll say in a certain new technology realm that's around today. About 200 people in the firm a year ago, a buddy of mine's there, he goes, hey, can you help us out? We're trying to hire a human system. There are about 100 people, they double the race, they do offices a whole bit. A week later, I'm like, hey, what's up, Fizz? What do you want to talk about? Do you want to talk about the job requirements? Do you want to talk about this? Do you want to talk about that? And he goes, no, actually, they just kind of need someone to go cPanel at this point because they're doing everything cloud. So when there is actually a big de-skilling going on, a whole lot of other shops. You're at small shops, quote unquote, which has five cabinets in a data center. Okay, we're talking about that context of what you need to know then. But the reality is that there is a serious de-skilling going on in a whole lot of other contexts. These are technology firms. They're not web-serving firms, they're not doing intensive calculations and shit like that, but they do have very significant large web presence, and they are known as technology firms. On the other hand, what they need for what used to be a skilled system, maybe when a dev and system and skills, quote-unquote DevOps today, and so on and so forth, have now de-skilled because they could, and will pay the extra overhead to do the cloud, and then they have someone who has, 2 years experience in cloud management. Shell? No. SSH? What? Okay, that is what's going on in a whole section of the economy right now, like it or not.
Yeah.
That's a reality. It's not
that's
a sort of
driven by two things. One, it's very hard to find people that are qualified and can do it any other way. And the other is that there are lots of developers that are working on ways to make it that easy because that's their business model.
And scalability
so
pay you twice as much next month to have half the amount of bandwidth.
Right. And the scalability is definitely, it's sort of the same idea, is that if you make it simple so that people don't need as much skill and it's not as dangerous, then it can grow to twice the size with no added risk. Of course.
And no added heads.
Yeah. And
truth, and let it have more cheaper. I got to say, real quick, I think this, the misinterpretation was so broad right now, I think, of what I'm trying to express. It means that this deserves an actual talk. Like, and, you know, like all of the things that are right in all of these tools that are actually in every single poverty-ish units with this, like every single one. Like, and all of these principles, like, everybody's thinking this, I think that this argument is spun out of control into something that is making the system something that's hard and requires hardcore expert users to do things with. When really, you know, at the end of the day, all of these tools also require somebody who understands things like, oh, what am I installing? A web server. Okay, that takes a certain amount of understanding.
Yeah, not much.
Well, but much less than, say, compiling Apache from a particular subversion tag to get different features that you want. There are economic and business reasons for legitimately dumbing things down.
Yeah, but I'm saying that like, you know, the tools are there and they're dumbed down enough. So they're wonderfully simple.
Simple and dumb are different words. Simple and dumb are different words.
We need dumb. What to do and how to do it. So the sysadmin will do how, and somebody else will do what. So you know how to compile a web server, you know what features it needs. So you'll create a playbook or a module to install that. But somebody else will do the how. And the how will run what. And what you do more often than how. So you just automate how to do it.
Okay, so I'm saying that with the tools on your system, you can be automatically doing it for.
I don't know. I don't know.